Sutta Goswami said, "O Brahmins, King Yudhishthira fully supported the statements of the Queen, which were in accordance with the principles of religion and were justified, glorious, full of mercy and equity, and without duplicity." Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Yudhishthira, who was the son of Dharmaraj or Yamaraj, fully supported the words of Queen Draupadi in asking Arjun to release Ashwatthama. One should not tolerate the humiliation of a member of a great family. Arjun and his family were indebted to the family of Dronacharya because of Arjun's learning the military science from him. If ingratitude was shown to such a benevolent family, it would not be at all justified from the moral standpoint. The wife of Dronacharya, who is the half-body of the great soul, must be treated with compassion, and she should not be put into grief because of her son's death. That is compassion. Such statements by Draupadi are without duplicity because actions should be taken with full knowledge. The feeling of equality was there because Draupadi spoke out of her personal experience. A barren woman cannot understand the grief of a mother. Draupadi was herself a mother, and therefore her calculation of the depth of Kripi's grief was quite to the point. And it was glorious, because she wanted to show proper respect to a great family. Om Agyante Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Shcham Tam Savadutam Sahagana Vitam Shcha Krishna Padan Sahagana Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhana Sute Devi Panamami Hari Priya Chakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Abhivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So my apologies for the delay this morning. The darkness made me miss my exit, and it's put me on a back foot in practically every way, from pronunciation to the meter of the verses. So my apologies, and I beg that your mercy is with me so that I can continue with the class in a more sensible manner. So we are on the chapter, The Son of Drona Punished. And this is a continuation of the last few days. How many devotees have been to the class over the last few days and keeping up with this chapter? Okay. And how many devotees in this room have actually read the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Okay, so let me just set this where we are at the moment in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The conversation is continuing between Shanaka Rishi and Sutta Goswami. And Sutta Goswami is now, for Shanaka Rishi and the sages of that are present, is setting the scene in terms of Parikshit Maharaj's background. What was going on at the point at which Parikshit Maharaj was, you know, what preceded the events before Parikshit Maharaj took the throne. And so we've come to a point actually in Mahabharata. This chapter, The Son of Drona Punished, is just after the Battle of Kurukshetra has finished. The Bhagavad Gita has already been spoken. So Arjun has already surrendered to Krishna. He's not just accepting him as his loving cousin, brother, family member, but also as his spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So his mood with Krishna is in many ways different to the earlier part of the Mahabharata. So we are at a point in this chapter where Ashwatthama, who was fighting on the Kaurav side, took the lives of Draupadi's five sons while they were asleep, which, you know, by modern day standards is probably not so unusual. But in a time when the Mahabharata was being fought, despite conflicts being present, people still adhered to dharmic principles. So we hear in the Mahabharata that actually, whilst the battle was going on, people would fight their best. If their duty was to fight, they would perform their best fight. But after that conch blows, afterwards they would even cross over to the other side's camp to speak to their friends and their relatives, sometimes play games with them. So the personal relationship was kept very separate from what their particular service or duty was. These days, you know, and there were also rules. You're not to hurt somebody who's asleep or intoxicated or has your back turned to them. So Ashwatthama had transgressed, so gone beneath these principles, not just dharmically, but in terms of showed a sign of weakness, and that he had to use such measures and target vulnerable children, the five sons of Draupadi, to kill them while they're asleep. So what's preceded this verse is really that the complex decision and dilemma, serious dilemma that Arjun's in, and he's been put in time and time again throughout the Mahabharata. This is just another dilemma, but we see actually through the eyes of the Srimad Bhagavatam and Arjun's relationship with Krishna, what a difference it makes to take shelter of Krishna and the wisdom that he brings when it comes to making complex decisions. Because so thus far, Arjun has first of all, not just being inflamed by his own distress and anger, he's also been inflamed by Draupadi's distress. That, my goodness, five sons, not just killed, but killed in such a horrendous way, in such an unfair way. You know, and he's made this promise that I will bring the head of Ashwatthama to you so that you can even stand on his head and take your next bath. Okay? This is how much he expressed that he was going to do something just to alleviate Draupadi's pain, but also to bring about justice to the act. Because if we look throughout Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives Arjun many reasons why he should fight, because Arjun, being soft-hearted, is also trying to find some reason not to fight. So actually, the Bhagavad Gita is, Krishna uses, as one sense, Arjun's duty as a platform to get him to understand who he is and surrender to him. So here we find Arjun again in a dilemma. So he's heard his wife's voice. He's also heard Krishna's voice. Krishna's also told him, yes, you know, this man has behaved terribly. You must, as a leader, punish him. Because if he doesn't get the required, you know, repercussions, then it will actually be worse for him. Right? We hear that often. We've heard this many times in class, that actually, if we don't get the repercussions of our actions in a timely manner or deliver them in a timely manner, that actually sometimes it can be worse. Anybody here ever got a parking ticket or a speeding ticket, and if you don't pay it on time, then your penalty doubles or even triples? And if you ignore it altogether, you come back with, you know, there's a program on TV, I can't even remember what it's called, but basically if you don't pay, they're bailiffs. They come and they... That's, if you can't pay, we'll take it away. That's it. So, what these people do is they're such heavy debt collectors that if you haven't paid a debt, and often the debts start off with something small, like a parking ticket, they will literally stand at the side of the road and stop your car. And your £50 ticket or £90 ticket has become like £1,000, £2,000, £3,000 because you've ignored it. So, Arjun's not just hearing this from, an idea of, okay, this is just in terms of, look what pain this has caused. This is just in terms of dharmic. But Krishna's also saying, I must, do something about the situation. But now we find, in the previous verse, that Draupadi has expressed that, actually, you know, I feel his mother's pain. Also, the family, they are benevolent. This is your teacher's son. So, you know, what good will come to Ashwatthama's mother? And what good will come to our family? Because she's putting her self-interests beneath the pain that it might cause Ashwatthama's mother, and also beneath the self beneath the interests of the family as a whole, as an entirety. So he's now hearing Draupadi, the other side of her voice, the wisdom, the vision she has beyond her immediate emotion. You know, we're often told that don't make a decision when you're in a heated emotion, whether that's anger, pain, anguish, even excitement. Don't get excited, right? We hear, don't get too excited. Just pause, stop for a moment, and think what else could be there. And on top of that, now in this verse, the king, his older brother, the son of Dharmaraj himself, is saying, yes, yes, this is very good what Draupadi is saying. So all these voices, you know, he's finding that he is in a position that all of these voices are there. None of these voices are completely wrong, right? None of them are wrong, and none of them are less important than the other. We have the king, we have the mother of the children, we have Krishna himself speaking up. And as the chapter progresses, he hears from his other brothers, okay, who also have differing views. And you know, Arjun's position, much like in the Bhagavad Gita, and Arjun's such a wonderful example for all of us, is he is in a dilemma that devotees and the living entity often finds themselves in, but particularly I think we find ourselves in as devotees, where, and it sounds unusual, our decisions become more complex as we progress. Now that sounds strange, right? It sounds contradictory. Shouldn't our decisions become more simple the more Krishna conscious we become? Well, actually, let me tell you why I'm saying this. When we first perhaps take to the spiritual path, some of the decisions we have to make are about, especially when we're using the barometer of what's in the best interest of my spiritual life. We're trying to bring our life to a platform where we are removing actions, words, and thoughts which are in the mode of ignorance or passion. Perhaps we're trying to bring things in line with the four regulative principles and sadhana bhakti. So it's almost black and white, right? Okay, well, this is right, this is wrong. This is helpful in spiritual life, this is not helpful in spiritual life. But what about when we get to a point where actually, on an external level, you know, in terms of the things that we're meant to do to help us become Krishna conscious, they're all there. But then the secondary things, you know, for example, service considerations, family considerations, health considerations, financial considerations, relationship considerations, all of these different considerations, even decor considerations, simple things like this, they're not black or white. There isn't one situation that is optimum. Even your ashram, okay, even your varna, there's no optimum blanket, absolute truth. What's the best varna? What's the best service? What's the best? There isn't. These are secondary things. And so we hear so many voices. So we often find ourselves in Arjun's position, because what we're hearing, we go to 10 different devotees and we will get 10 different answers about what we should do. Yes? You go to 10 different devotees about what's the way to achieve Krishna Prem. All 10 will say, chant the Maha Mantra, right? Nobody's going to dispute that. You're not going to get 10 different mantras. But you are someone, which ashram should I be in? What job should I do? Should I give up this job? Should I buy a bigger house, a smaller house? Okay. Should I start this relationship? Should I end this relationship? You'll get 10 different answers from 10 different people, because these are, I guess, secondary considerations. But they are important. And I'll come back to why they're important. I want to come back to this verse, though, in particular, particularly about King Yudhishthira says about Draupadi. So Sudha Goswami said, "Oh Brahmins, King Yudhishthira fully supported the statements of the queen, which were in accordance with the principles of religion and were justified, glorious, full of mercy, equity, and without duplicity." Now, Srila Prabhupada makes this point that about being without duplicity. What do we normally understand about the word duplicitous? What does that mean? What does that mean to you? Hypocrite, okay. Somebody here was saying something? Ulterior motive. So your motive is not transparent. Yes, you're saying one thing, perhaps you mean something else, you're doing one thing, and it might appear as if you're doing it in the best interests of that person, but you're doing it for another reason, Okay, sometimes people can do the right thing for the wrong reasons. Yes? Yes, we see that in politics, don't we? People do the right thing for the wrong reasons. Sometimes it appears like people have done the wrong thing, but they do it for the right reasons. Okay? Again, something we'll come back to, what Prabhupada emphasizes here, she does this with full knowledge. Full knowledge helps us to be less duplicitous. And the knowledge that Srila Prabhupada seems to be referring to here was, he talks about this, you know, we have many ways we can acquire knowledge. Yes, we can acquire knowledge through information. Information is a type of knowledge. Experience is a type of knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada, what I glean from what he's saying here in terms of this aspect of Draupadi being non-duplicitous is actually, she was able to be without duplicity because by experience, she had knowledge of what is it going to be like for Ashwatthama's mother to experience the loss of her son. I felt so much pain. I don't want to put another living entity through that grief. So this allowed her to be clear and transparent because she had real information, not just based on a hypothesis, but also her experience. And this also invoked compassion, a very important quality for a devotee. And Yudhishthira Maharaj says she has made, you know, this decision, this insight with mercy and equity. She's been equipoised. Krishna encourages us, right, to be equipoised through happiness and distress. So she's trying to maintain her equity in a position of great, great distress. So Draupadi is being glorified here. You know, Srila Prabhupada also says, you know, he actually balances the two. He speaks about in this purport about how this is Draupadi's good nature. So devotees are good natured. Yes, they want to see that the right thing is done, but with least harm. Yes. And not just the right thing, but of all the right things to do, what is the best right thing? Okay, this is why I was speaking about actually as devotees, sometimes our decision becomes more complex, more difficult, because we are not choosing from right and wrong. We are choosing from all the rights. Okay, often we're in this situation where actually everything can be right. There's no, but what we're looking for is the best decision. And this is where Krishna's voice is important. And this is the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. This is the purpose of every Shastra. This is the purpose of every guru and every teacher, is to actually help us to understand if we listen to Krishna's voice primarily, then even if we take every other voice into consideration, we are still able to find a solution which is made in a balanced and measured way. And how is this illustrated in this chapter? So, I appreciate next week somebody is going to be speaking on these other verses that follow this one. But what I want to touch on is actually that after this conundrum, after Arjun hears the voice of Nakul and Sahadev and Bhishmadev, who actually do oppose, actually Nakul and Sahadev agree, but Bhima is angry. And he's enraged. He's like, what are you doing? Why are you listening to Draupadi? You know, she's being very soft-hearted. He's taking the side of, you know, justice must be brought. Okay. So amongst all of this, Krishna actually tells Arjun, he says, in not so many words, but he says, do everything. Please everybody. So, you know, bring this man to justice without killing him, but kill him, right? So next week somebody will speak about that aspect a little bit more. But these voices, even for us, they can often come across as if they're conflicting, as if they're in opposition. And that's what can make it difficult for us, yes? When we have a mature understanding about a subject, we can hear very conflicting voices about a subject, but we are able to take them as the multifacets or many dimensions of the same topic. It's like looking at a picture. Has anybody ever seen, you know, you get those pieces of artwork where if you look at it one way, it's a staircase going up, and you look at it another way, it looks like a butterfly. You know, so somebody who enjoys that kind of art, that complexity, actually, wow, this is so wonderful. If I look at this in different ways, it's beautiful in different ways. It shows me different things. Somebody else is very, you know, rigid and wants to be very clear. How, what is this picture showing me? They can find it frustrating. Oh, I hate these pictures. You know, one minute it looks like this, another minute it looks like this. I don't know what to do with a picture like that. You just, if I want a painting, it must be very clear. If I want scenery, just show me scenery. Yes? So it can happen like this in our spiritual life also, and in our day-to-day life, that the things we find most challenging are those things where we perhaps have less experience and have some growth to do in terms of not just our attachments, but in terms of appreciating different perspectives. Isn't that often one of the things that brings up conflict amongst teams and individuals, whether it's within spiritual life or outside of spiritual life, is a difficulty appreciating the other side. So we see that Draupadi is being glorified for being able to put herself in the shoes of another person. But also what's being emphasized is it's through experience as well. That is important. Experience counts for a lot in our devotional life. You know, when Prabhupada says, you chant 16 rounds, follow 4 regulative principles, and I guarantee you'll go back to Godhead. Yes, he's definitely saying that that's the magic formula, and he's empowering us through that formula, that he's got our back. But he's also, I think, saying that, you know, you stick with the process, and with time, you know, this idea of mango ripening, right? The mango that's hasn't yet fallen from the tree, and the one that's fallen, the only difference is time, the time it's taken for it to ripen. That time brings experience. You know, Krishna designs our life for us. He designs each of our lives for us. And two people can take the same decision for very different reasons, and it can lead to very, very different consequences. And this is what Gita is all about, isn't it? That Krishna changes the outcome of what the battle of Kurukshetra means for Arjun, based on what Arjun's motive is going to be to fight. Is he just going to fight out of anger? Is he going to fight so nobody thinks he's a scaredy cat? Is he going to fight because it's dharmic? Is he going to fight just because he enjoys it, because it's in his nature? Or is he going to fight because Krishna's asked him to fight? So all of those 5 reasons are all valid, but they all give Shraddha Gokulananda Jiki Jai. They're all valid. They will all have a consequence, but which one, which consequence trumps and prevails depends on which voice and which motive Arjun connects with. So again, Arjun is brought again into this dilemma. He has to take the consideration of his duty as a warrior, his duty as a leader, his duty as a husband, his duty as and in his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his cousin, his friend, his spiritual master, all rolled into one. And his own feelings. Let's not forget, we all have our own opinions, we all have our own feelings, our own desires. Yes? Arjun is naturally going to be very upset that his children have been killed. So all of these things are there to juggle. And we all find ourselves in this situation, not just once, not just time, what, twice. It comes up time and time again, perhaps in different aspects of our life, but we find ourselves in this situation. We're pulled in different directions. But just like every voice and every motive carries with it a different consequence, it also connects us with a different power and a different law. Yes? What do I mean by this? So if we are making decisions on our psychological needs, then we connect with the laws of nature that govern the psyche and the mind and the consequences related to that, and the demigods who govern that side. Also, of course, we know Krishna controls everything. If we make decisions based on physicality, again, yes, we might be harnessing physical power, biological power, and the consequences of all of that. But again, we come under the laws that govern the body, the laws that govern physical nature. We have the more subtle or metaphysical. Again, we make our decisions based on that. The consequences, the powers, the laws that we connect with are to do with that. We make our decisions based on the legal system. Then we take shelter of the legal system, the protection of it, but we also then have to abide by the consequences and the repercussions of the legal system and also their jurisdiction. We then have the laws of dharma, the laws of modes of passion, goodness, ignorance, and then there is a power connected with transcendence, with our relationship with Guru, with our relationship with Krishna. And actually this umbrellas is the source of and contains every other law. Okay, and within it we can find a solution which can fulfill every other law. Doesn't Prabhupada say time and time again that, you know, for a pure devotee, they actually don't have obligations dharmically, legally, in so many ways. It's not that one should be irresponsible. Prabhupada doesn't say, okay, become the most, you know, criminally minded person in society if you're a pure devotee. No, he understands, of course, he's explaining. If somebody is pure, they're actually connecting to the highest power, the highest wisdom. So it is then expected that they're not going to be doing things that are lower than human nature. Yes? That's expected. So you don't have, that's why they're above it. Yeah? It's the same. You know, Prabhupada would often say devotees should be the most well-behaved citizens, most morally minded, have the best etiquette, because we're setting an example. So here we have us, Arjun, often caught in this conundrum. So when Krishna says, you know, try and do everything. Try and find a way to listen to all of these voices and fulfill all of your duties. But by Arjun listening to Krishna's instruction, what happens? Arjun's then empowered by Krishna's voice internally. Then there's a very nice description later. I don't want to take away from next week's, you know, speaker. So there's a very nice description later on where Prabhupada explains in one of the purports how Arjun is able to connect to Krishna in the heart and find this solution. And he's able to kill Ashwatthama without killing him. Because death means different things for different people. Death isn't just death of the body. All of us, we die many times in this lifetime. And we are reborn many times in this lifetime because we have many deaths. Just like there's the material dissolution, right? At the end of Brahma's day, everything is destroyed, then recreated. And then at the end of his lifetime, there's a bigger dissolution. Everything starts all over again. Same for us. We go through so many endings and beginnings in this lifetime. And Krishna gives us all these different endings and beginnings to teach us detachment, to show us a mini version of what life will be like, what that last few minutes, when it's time to change bodies or leave this body permanently, how difficult it might feel. It gives us a glimpse because we have to let go. And when that point comes, what becomes very acutely apparent is out of all of these voices, all of these laws, all of these powers that we connect with, everything is relative except the absolute truth. All of the other decisions we've made, they are important to the degree that we've made them our priority. Am I making sense? So, you know, when Krishna talks about us being equipoise, making good decisions, when Srila Prabhupada talks about this very, Prabhupada almost cuts through it like a knife, saying actually the way the devotee discriminates is you accept anything that is favorable to Krishna consciousness and you reject anything that is unfavorable. Okay? It sounds so simple because he is simple. For him, the priority is what is pleasing to Krishna. But in our journey to getting to that point where because there's going to be for all of us, some things we're making that decision is very easy because we don't have so many attachments in that particular area. And it's going to be different for all of us, right? Different for all of us based on our upbringing, our psychosocial nature, our previous karmic prints. But in some areas, prioritizing and making that the number one priority, Krishna's will, is going to be a bit harder. And so these mini chapters, they come in our life, these mini deaths and births, they come in our life because with each mini birth and death, we become more detached because we become more attached to Krishna. It happens naturally. We don't have to do it artificially. We don't have to remove ourselves from the things that one needs just for human functioning to continue on this planet. Not just continue on this planet, but uplift everybody's consciousness. You know, I read something really nice this week, and I'd given it thought before, but not in this way. You know, we often, everybody here gets the flu, right? Infections, colds, all sorts of things. And we understand that nothing happens by chance. Even these living entities or viruses and bacteria are within our body. They're residing. We are home to many millions of entities. There are millions of bacteria and viruses, and some of them are helping us, right? It's quite trendy to think about the gut bacteria, how if your gut bacteria is healthy, it's good for your mood, it's good for your digestion. These are also entities. But actually what I read, very, very interesting, Leadership, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's books, Leadership 2, it's based on Bhishma Dev's instructions. And Maharaj makes this very nice point that actually our consciousness even affects the consciousness of the living entities, of the bacteria, the viruses, the ones who live with us permanently, and even the ones who visit to make us sick. We can use that as an opportunity to even transform their consciousness, because these entities have the power to transform our consciousness. What I found very interesting about that is that, you know, in my work, often I'll meet people who don't have a mental health issue because of trauma or because there's been a big life event, but they've had an infection, what seems like a normal physical infection. It comes, it goes, but then after that, they seem to be completely psychologically debilitated. And I was just thinking, you know, scientists, we invest a lot of money and time, right? Medicine invests a lot of time and money to find the cause of a problem. It's because if you know the cause, then maybe you can find the cure. And they try to find, well, maybe there's something about that infection that gets into the brain and then it affects the psychology of the person and, you know, makes them depressed and this and that. But I was thinking, actually, there could also be this element, of course, that these entities have consciousness. They have a mindset. Just like we have pious humans, we have pious cats and dogs. And you have cats and dogs who are less pious, right? So there must be viruses and bacteria who are more helpful and more unhelpful, depending on which environment they're in, even on a metaphysical or on a subtle level. So why am I speaking about this? I'm speaking about this because every aspect of our life that's been designed for us, if we take our decisions carefully, can be an opportunity to really accelerate in our spiritual life. Krishna's not just punishing us because, oh, it's your karma, just deal with it. You know, that's not how Krishna rolls, and we see this. Because actually Krishna's relationship with us is based on love. And he is the best example of how punishment is, or repercussions, even the sometimes unpalatable ones or difficult to digest ones, are delivered by somebody who's loving rather than somebody who's just doing it because it's their job, right? Back to that program, Pay or We'll Take It Away. I remember the name now. So Pay or We'll Take It Away. They're coming to do their job, right? They don't have any emotional connection to the people that they're taking. Okay, sorry, I need to take your TV and your sofa and this and that or your car away. This is my job. I get my paycheck at the end of the month. Sorry, you know, you need to deal with it. I know for TV purposes, sometimes they do some drama and, you know, the bailiffs, maybe they feel for the people sometimes out of compassion because they've maybe been there themselves before, have family. But generally, they're just doing their job. But you look at parents who have to put their child in time out or who need to punish their child as a matter of love. Because actually, if you love someone, sometimes you have to go out of your way to make sure that you are doing something which helps them to grow. But that parent stays with that child, right? Not only do they give the repercussions to their child, a good parent, they also help the child to understand how to repair things so that they don't happen again. But they're also there with a loving embrace once the difficulty's over. So we look at how Krishna is there in our lives. He doesn't ever send us a challenge, a test, without giving us all the tools to overcome it. Yeah, he's done the same thing here with Arjun. He's there. He's there with him. Okay, now Arjun can feel and see his presence very directly with direct perception because of his purity, we can also. It is a real part of our spiritual life to have the personal association of Krishna. But before that, we also need to experience the internal association of Krishna and the association of Krishna through Shastra. He's always there. He's there through the Guru. He's there through the deity form. So whatever is being delivered to us, whether they're good consequences, digestible consequences, indigestible consequences, painful consequences, for whatever reason, whether it's a test, because Krishna wants to use us as an example, whether it's our karma, whether it's a reaction to an offense, Krishna's there. He's holding our hand. If we are conscious that he's holding our hand through these very many mediums, it makes it much easier for us to make the right decision. I just wanted to, in these last couple of minutes, just share a few things that might be helpful for you and for me, and I found these helpful when making difficult decisions where there's many voices. Is, yes, of course, we take the advice of senior devotees. But there are some questions we can ask ourselves that make the decision-making process easier. I found that considering these following categories with any decision helps us to become more broad-minded, but with the direction of Shastra. So I find it helpful to split the voices up into categories, so to speak. So when making any decision, first of all, and I think this is, I find it helpful to go outwards to inwards. Some people find it easier to go inwards to outwards. So there is no specific order to these questions. You go with which answer comes first to you. But these are the categories. So one is take into consideration what you want. What do you actually want? What do your desires tell you? And this is not just your emotional desires or your psychological desires. Consider those, your physiological desires, your desires to please your spiritual master, your desires. This is separate from what your guru is actually instructing or what Krishna is instructing. But in terms of your desires to please the guru, to please Krishna, they're two different things. They are two different because there's always two people in a relationship. So your desires. What's dharmic? Okay, so look at dharma. What would be the most dharmic or mode of goodness way to proceed? What would be your family's opinion? And that could be your family of devotees, that could be your biological family, it could be immediate, it could be extended, it's different for all of us. What might be acceptable to society? Or what's more acceptable to society? Because that's definitely a consideration for people. Especially as devotees are more and more greater in numbers in congregation rather than in the ashram or in the temple ashram. What would Krishna want? And remember, all of these voices, somehow or another, Krishna also comes through, right? When Arjun's listening to all these voices, when he's listening to the voice of dharma is Krishna's voice, isn't it? It's Krishna manifesting through the laws of material nature. Yeah. And what would Guru want? Whether that's Srila Prabhupada, your initiating Guru, your Shiksha Guru, what would Guru say? And then when you have all these voices, and you blend them, and you prioritize, and we listen out for, okay, if I was to give no consideration to anyone but Krishna's voice, what would the outcome be? And then I add all these other voices in. Is there a way I can fulfill all of it without fulfilling all of it, in one sense, directly and indirectly? So this is, I wanted to share this because we don't, within the time span of a Bhagavatam class, this is it's a nice exercise to do, but one you can't fit in a Bhagavatam class, but perhaps it's something we can try at home, the next time you have a decision. Cause we get too caught up in trying to make things black and white and they're not. There's so many colors there. So I just want to end back on the first point that I made, that as devotees, as we progress, our decisions become more complex because we are trying to find the best of the right way. And to find the best way of all the right ways, we take shelter of the best person and the best voice. If we do that, then everything else becomes a lot easier, just like this decision for Arjun, we find that by the end of the chapter, it becomes very straightforward. And in the end, actually everybody is appeased. Every law, every power falls into balance. Any discussion points or questions, comments?